Satan gives them skill in deceit. And there is no answer to this except the development of a corresponding integrity in themselves. And, of course, this is considered a rather dangerous thing, on some levels at least, and any effort to improve integrity will be opposed. If you form a group to prove conclusively that you'd like a better way of doing something, someone will come along to break up that group. It is inevitable. But there's not much anyone can do to break up humanity. If individuals quietly, personally, and in their own lives live better, the result is an almost invulnerable situation. Nothing can really stand against it very long. The only thing that can be done is to have someone go out and try to propaganda the opposite. But this, in turn, becomes more and more difficult as people think about the problems we're in. It is awfully difficult today to propaganda anything in defense of the way we're doing things now, because the average person is thoroughly disillusioned with the situation and is not going to be easily over-influenced. Now, in our religious and philosophical way of life, there are many other things that become very useful and helpful and well worth thinking about. It is very valuable to realize that there is a rather healthy core of younger people today with positive religious dedications. They are young people who are green. They are not mature. They are not thoroughly responsible in every way. But they are idealists. They are dedicated. They are striving to do something to break away from corruption. And they are using various religious devices to help them with this. They are forming small religious communities, which no one is paying too much attention to because the average person doesn't realize the potential in them. If these groups are sincere, honorable, and keep their integrities, they can show the way to a utopian possibility that we all ought to know more about. We also realize that out of these types of things are coming cooperatives of one kind or another, of people working together, of swapping, of barter, and of gradually escaping the deadly pressure of an economic situation. The average individual is in prison to economics just as though he was in jail. He doesn't dare to move because it will upset the mysterious balance of economics. So he does nothing. In a desperate effort to leave things the way it is, and by doing nothing, he completely upsets everything. There's no way out of this type of situation except for the person to begin to take over his life. Now, we all have problems in family, friendship, business, all these things, but we can gradually improve our relationships. Now, we're going to be disappointed in some instances, let's face it. We're going to try to do nice things for people, and they're not going to appreciate it, and they're going to criticize and condemn us for doing them. But this is not too important. They've always condemned the individual who tried to help them. Therefore, the person who is trying to help realizes this. He is not going to be discouraged by the fact that he does not immediately attain the goal which he hopes. The best point to consider is that regardless of whether it's received or rejected, a good deed is a responsibility of the individual who does it. He has to do it. If he doesn't have to do it, society fails. So little by little, there can come through this something that is against the corrosion that we are suffering from. And this thing that has to come into it is integrity. Integrity is the basis of all human relationships. It is the basis of confidence. It is the foundation for family strength and unity. It has to do with every phase of labor and capital and management. The integrities are the things upon which civilization can be built. When we know what is right and we do it, we are going to succeed. But if we know what is right and we do not do it, we are going to fail. because this rightness relates to a universal situation and not to ourselves. Integrities are, according to us, a kind of moral values. But in the infinite pattern of things, integrities are the immutable laws of space. In some mysterious way, every integrity is involved in the actual creation and function of the universe. Integrities are the dependabilities of things. The fact that we are reasonably certain that the sun's going to rise tomorrow morning is one of the integrities. We trust it because we know it will happen. Now, there are invisible integrities that are just as strong. There are all kinds of values in life which we discover by calling upon them in time of need. Among the integrities, the greatest and most important, socially speaking, is cooperation. And this cooperation we find everywhere in space. There is no competition in the cosmos. Everything has to work together in order to maintain that splendor which we call the galaxy. There can be no competition in the human body. Now, the different systems and the different parts of the human body, the blood, all of these elements, do not cooperate, man is dead. It is not possible for competition to survive. Nor can one organ raise a flag and say, I'm going to take over the body. That also is fatal. And anarchy in the body is fatal. And the overgrowth of one unit against the rest can be fatal. Cooperation is the secret of the human body's function. And over that cooperation is something we call the mind, or the intelligence of the person. And having passed through a number of stomach aches and maybe had considerable medical expense, that mind begins to think in terms of taking care of that body, rather than being the victim of its abuses. Now, the same thing has to happen in the larger world of things. The individual has wars, pestilences, earthquakes, tidal waves, and every type of dangerous natural phenomena. He must gradually wake up to the meaning of these things. He must discover how the parts of the universe cooperate with each other, and that this cooperation is a great archetype. It is the supreme textbook of all things. And it's written in various living forms, from the most gigantic nebula somewhere in space to the tiniest atom on the back of a flea. It is all under law. There is no more magnificent structure in the world than the eye of a fly. It is all a tremendous over-integration, an integrity, a complete lawfulness that manifests on every plane of nature. The only exception to this lawfulness is man's determination to be different. And when he tries to be different, he doesn't realize the divine edict, to be different is to die. There is no way in which the individual is going to outwit the universe. There's no way that he can do wrong and have the benefits that nature bestows upon that which is obedient. The small animal learns from the time of its birth to obey. It learns from the parent who speaks nothing, but leads the way by conduct. It knows gradually the laws of its kind. Man must learn the laws of his kind. And his laws, strangely, are more simple than any other, because he is the most adequately equipped to solve problems. Many creatures live and die without knowing what their problems are. Man, however, has the capacity to know. He can learn the tremendous value of living in a cooperative relationship with life around him, with its natural resources, with its ecology, with all of the different aspects of relationships and interrelationships. The human being can learn the law. And having learned it, he can keep it. And the law that he keeps will keep him. There is no reason why the human being's education should not be founded upon the great ethical structure that supports the cosmos. There is no scientist, no physicist, no astronomer, no biologist or chemist who can deny this tremendous integrity in space. In fact, the research people in all fields depend upon it every day. It is the fact that they know that their experiments will work according to natural law that they go on. And they know there will be no exception to these laws. And if the experiment doesn't work, it is because the human being has mistaken the technique. So all the way along, we have an integrity that tells us how to exist. Now, this integrity has been working on us in a number of different ways. Now we have another phase of it coming into condition. We are a small planet, rather insignificant in the large scheme of things. Mark Twain called us the wart, and perhaps that's what we are. But anyway, we're here, and every day there are more of us here. Little by little, the wandering tribes have consolidated, magnified, and multiplied. One of these days, maybe not in our lifetime, but someday, we're going to be inhabited from layer after layer of the Earth's surface. We're going to have no place to lie down, even, if the present procedure goes on. We're going to find ourselves gradually in a planet, the resources of which we have completely wasted. We will find that our way of life, our indifference to values, that in one war we can waste enough petroleum to take care of our needs maybe for 100 years, all of these things will have to come home to us. We are the ones who are very foolish. Instead of conserving our resources, we waste them for profit when we should conserve them for use. And if we don't come around to this one of these days, we're going to be out of resources. Then we're all going to get very excited. One's going to say there's no God who would permit this to happen. Another one will say it is God and he's going to wipe us out. Somebody else says, oh, I was just foolish and my goodness, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And gradually we may find a tremendous shattering of what could have been a magnificent structure. There's still time to do something about it, but the handwriting is definitely on the wall. We're not going to be able to continue this way forever. But perhaps some hope that they will be able to continue this way as long as they live, and then they're out of it. Well, perhaps the Oriental mind is correct. Instead of being out of it, they're going to have a vacation and back right into it again and face all the things that they caused 500 years earlier. There seems to be something in nature that should say, you don't get away from problems until you solve them. If you hope to die to get away from a mistake, you're going to be born just in time for the mistake to catch up with you again. This doesn't make good sense. Nor does it make good sense in an ethical universe that an individual by dying can escape from anything. Now, we don't follow the idea that man passes from here into perdition and that he's going to be hounded around by little red devils with pitchforks. Maybe the hell that he's worried about getting into, it means that what's going to happen when he comes back here? Maybe when he's reborn here, this is it. And he's going to be it until he does something about it. He's going to be born back into the imperfections to which he contributed. He's going to be forced to continue to do the job until he does it right. And this situation is something that is to be given very serious thought by people today. Now, so we say today we have meditation exercises and we have all kinds of groups with spiritual convictions and spiritual aspirations. Now, a good many of them, however, have a basic weakness. They're all expecting somebody else or something else to do the job. They do not expect to be the one who must clean the thing up. They are waiting to call upon hierarchies or something else to come down and save us. Well, there may be some truth in that, too. But I think even the best hierarchy would like to see a little better work done here. I think it's been hardly within the religious concept of universal integrities that any spiritual power should reward the individual for being wrong, or that should take away from him the consequences of his own conduct. So whatever happens, we better start now. If there are superior powers that want to come in and help, let us provide them with adequate vehicles to do so. Let us give our own selves as instruments to a purpose. Instruments in the sense of conditioned people, thoughtful and dedicated. Persons who have risen above prejudice and political explosiveness and have settled down to the problem of trying to work out a better way of life for humanity. Now, everywhere, here and there, very hopeful signs are appearing over the edge of things. There are steps being taken, and little by little, the improvement is coming. But whether it can be made to come fast enough very largely depends upon the individual himself starting out to correct his own conduct. Let's say, for instance, that a person who really believes he wants to help in this situation makes it a moral resolution that he will never again take a drink while driving. Never. Or that he will never drive a car when he's stone sober. Now, this would be a tremendous hardship on a lot of people, because they don't care about this. The individual who does that does not care. He has a feeling of importance or significance in himself often, which makes him say, this accident will never happen to me. Other people may get into trouble, but I won't. And the next thing you know, he's in the hospital. But if we believe in an integrity and in the right of things to be right, then we have to set the complete example. And it won't do us a bit of harm. In fact, we'll all live longer and be healthier. I've nursed too many people through delirium tremens and the suicides resulting from it to have very much delusion on this subject. The individual who overdrinks is simply committing low suicide and is destroying the body and this consciousness and the mind which was given to him by a power greater than himself to be used for the fulfillment of a destiny much more important than a wreck on the corner. He has to take these things into consideration. So let's say he will never again take a drink. This is not only a social dedication, but a religious one. That he believes in integrities. That he does not believe in endangering other people for his own pleasure. That he is not going to be selfish enough to take the chance of killing innocent persons. Now, if everyone took that attitude in a nation which is sufficiently civilized and sufficiently educated so that this attitude would seem to be perfectly natural and normal, we'd have a great deal better situation here. We would have less to worry about and less problem to face and the expense of maintaining efforts to control the accident-prone individual. The fines won't do any good. He will come right on back. We have a speed limit of 55 miles an hour, and not one person in five keeps it. Now, we may not agree with that speed limit, but it is a speed limit which our society has been invited to share. And until other laws or other arrangements are made, integrity says we should keep it. This is the thing that was faced by Abraham Lincoln back in the Civil War days. They told him he should help to run Negroes through the underground between the South and the North and help them to escape because they knew he did not believe in slavery. Lincoln said, I can't do it. I cannot break the law which has been established, but I hope to live long enough to change the law. And this is what many people will have to do. We are not going to grow by breaking laws, but by gradually proving that we can improve situations. and by having a better way of life for all concerned. This same situation applies largely to our narcotics problem. The narcotics problem would be very much relieved if the average individual, particularly the teenager or the younger person, had the integrity to refuse not only to use, but to peddle it, because it is against the greater good to the greater number. No individual in his right mind and a right moral character is going to want to give people things that are going to destroy them. They're not going to cater to something that will cause in the end death, suicide, insanity, and a general disorganization of society. Any individual who has any integrity is going to be no part of it, and is going to do everything possible not to contribute. And if several thousand young people who are being tempted to become peddlers simply decline to be, and gradually, one after another, the levels of society reject narcotics as individuals, not because of police, but because they, for the first time in their lives, they know what they're up against, the traffic would end. No individual in his right mind wants to kill himself unless he has nothing else to do. And if he has nothing else to do, it's high time he found something else to do. You cannot legislate it, but the individual can outgrow his own stupidity in believing that he should do it. And this is the way it can be cleared up. If for 1 year people refused to use narcotics, the whole industry would fall apart. But as long as we say to ourselves, we will do as we please, we're going to have it because that's what we please to do. But it's hard to understand why educated persons living in a comparatively modern world and with many opportunities and advantages never before available to mankind should simply, honestly, and sincerely desire to destroy themselves. Why? For a thrill, for something of this nature. The same thing, it falls into our moral structure. The morality of the people is falling, and falling seriously. And yet our great ethical institutions have always told us the facts of this. The integrities are clear and evident, but we're not keeping them. And yet we are wise enough, old enough, and educated enough to know why we should keep them. There is no excuse for the average educated person who at least has graduated from high school to have any doubts or uncertainties about what is right. There may be fine points of distinction and litigation that he may not understand, but in the daily living of his own life, he has sufficient understanding to do what is right if he will sacrifice ulterior motives in his own nature. If he will not try to gain unfairly advantage over others, he will find that it's much easier to keep the golden rule. Each of these different problems that we face today, unemployment, all these things, can be very largely improved by simple integrity. And it's hard to get, because the people who need it worst are the first to deny it. And those who would benefit most from honesty will vote against it. But a vote can't do it. That's another problem. But if a labor union is in problem, its members can vote to strike or not to strike. But if a situation is unreasonable or unfair on either hand, the individual member has the decision in his own hand. He can say, I don't agree. And if 50,000 or 100,000 members of a union walk out in spite of the union attitude, you'll find the attitude of the union will change very quickly. If the individual's integrities are stronger than the ulterior motives of those regulating so many institutions, those institutions will come down to size and behave themselves. It all depends upon this mysterious, simple little creature that we call man. The human being who has within his grasp at all times the mystery of life. Now, many people are making the mistake, of course, and getting into serious trouble from it, of assuming that they have a very limited time to make these decisions, and also that they are going to be dead a long time, if not permanently, and the point is to have all the fun there is in it right now. Get all you can now, so that you'll have more for your children to fight over when you're gone. Also more for the government to take away. Actually, the problem of this emergency is not as acute as we realize. After a very short time, practically everything that we have sacrificed integrity for becomes meaningless. As age advances, possessions become less and less valuable. We become weary of public office. All these different things lose all their glamour and all their goodness. And finally, as we grow older, we come back to essentials. The essentials of a good life. Quiet, peace, integrity, a few good friends, a close family, and something to do. All the rest of it is very largely an illusion and always was. And the best thinking years of our lives sometimes are damaged by the younger years in which we have wrecked health, damaged our characters, and become disillusioned with life. There is no reason why anyone should ever be disillusioned. It's a double negative to begin with. And it is not a condition that can exist. The only thing that an individual really has to worry about is the danger of being ashamed of himself sometime. He cannot be disillusioned because it is his own attitude and his own character which has created the illusions that have been swept away. The only answer is to so conduct himself within the pattern of his integrities that these situations aren't important. In medicine, we have the same type of situation. We have a tremendous overload of technical skills, but we lack what the first physicians of antiquity lacked. But we also lack some of the things they learned and we have forgotten. And that is that healing is very largely integrity. The individual who does not abuse life will have the greatest benefits of life. The average individual can escape most of the problems of expensive medication, especially in later years, by living a moderate life. Dissipation will simply bring him into the hospital sooner. He will find that all of the ways in which he breaks natural law will contribute to the breaking of himself. So it's best for him to start in at an early date to keep the rules. And if he keeps the pattern of integrities, he will greatly reduce his problems of health. He also will discover that mental attitudes are very important in health. In this generation, fear is the common emotion. Everyone is frightened. Fear is deadly. And fear can bring more upon the individual in the form of sickness and strife and trial and disillusionment than any other one emotion. In this universe, there is nothing to fear. Everything is part of a plan that is so exact that we really don't have to fear. The only thing we have to do is fulfill. We have to think through things. Instead of being afraid of a problem, we should recognize the importance of facing it and solving it. Otherwise, it will become a cause of anxiety. Now, we may also say that supposing the worst happens, and all in spite of all the things that we do, or because of all the things that we do, the end is perilous. That we do not come through this emergency successfully, what's going to happen? Well, in the great pattern of things, nothing of importance. The individual cannot destroy that which is not his. He cannot do very much to damage a universe in which life goes on for eternal light years beyond figuring a calculation. He is boasting or very egotistic if he thinks he can in any way embarrass the functions of the universe. He can't. The only thing he can do is to give himself a bad time. Now, this bad time doesn't mean he can destroy himself, because we all believe, I think, with grounds, that within man himself is an indestructible core, which nothing can destroy, even all his own mistakes. We may lose our planet, we might lose our mortgage, we might lose our job, we might lose our health, but we will never cease to exist. And whatever happens in the infinite future, and regardless of the mistakes we have made, we will all be wiser because of what we did wrong. There's no question about it. But we will also have greater inducements to do it right. And sometime in the infinite future of things, there's going to be a world of people who did it right. And there'll be us. We'll be there. Because we will keep on doing it wrong until we can't stand it any longer. When we've lost everything we have, then we begin to realize what we are. But there is something more valuable to us than all these things. We will come through the fire, and we'll discover when it's all said and done that we lost nothing except errors. We lost nothing but delusions, nothing but fallacies and fantasies, and that the realities of that great universal plan to which we belong are still flowing along peacefully and pleasantly, and we with them. We will gradually grow up. It's hard because most children don't like to grow up. They like to grow out into larger worlds of freedom. They like to do as they please and escape forever guidance of parental powers. But in the universe, there is no escape from the guidance of the infinite universal pattern itself. But in that pattern is an inevitable fulfillment. All things in the end have to come out right. And the only thing we can do is delay the process. As the alchemist said, art perfects nature. Perfection is ultimate, but it's a long and trying problem unless we take hold of ourselves and grow a little faster through intent. Some grow in spite of everything, and some grow because of personal effort. Some will wait until the last moment to improve their own natures. Others start intentionally to improve by the control of those fallacies which have already caused them plenty of trouble. So in this particular state of affairs, it is very important that we take what we know and do something with it. And doing something with it means to live within our means, to keep out of debt if possible, because it's a worry, to be very scrupulous in our integrities with other people, be very patient with the mistakes of others, and even be patient with the mistakes of ourselves, but never be patient enough with our own mistakes that we no longer desire to correct them. Recognize that every fault we find in any other person may well also be in ourselves. But we will have the power and the right, if we so desire, to use this magnificent instrument that has been given to us by the infinite to correct ourselves, to grow in grace and glory, to strengthen the eternal principles of integrity with which we have been endowed, and to gradually develop until we can stand forth as a truly human being. For a human being is one in whom the humanities dominate all other considerations. A human being is one who is simply above compromise, or as Confucius said of the superior man, he said the superior man is one who is incapable of an inferior action. We have to fight to keep our principles, but the day will come when these principles will be ourselves, and we will be these principles, and we will in every day live according to them. And they will be perfectly normal, and we will enjoy them, and enjoy most of all a world that has not been scarred and defaced and destroyed by the cupidity, selfishness, and violence of mankind. The really integrities of life come in the simple life. They are the simple ways of doing things, simple people doing simple things in kindly ways. These are the things we need desperately now. The person who will keep the pattern, keep the truth, keep the faith, and just roll up his sleeves and do the work that's at hand. There's a great deal of work to be done to pull this civilization out of the doldrums. And the only way it can be done is by honest people doing honest things with every bit of spirit, faith, and hope that they have. This is religion. And this is the condition which undoubtedly is going to bring religion back into the foreground. Because we will never make this achievement unless we begin to have a spiritual realization of life and put the powers of the soul above the appetites of the body. If we can do this, and religion becomes an inner strength, a faith against and above fear, something that is going to help us to keep on going because of principles, because of realities, because of duties, obligations, and opportunities. If we can do these things and live according to them, then our ethical world comes back. We are an ethical people again. We deserve good things to happen. And what we deserve will happen. We can create for ourselves here on this planet, even now, a better world than the world has ever known before. But to do it, we've got to do things better than we have ever done them before. Otherwise, these good things will not happen. Well, thank you very much, folks.